Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Jillian Murphy, a naturopath, speaker, educator, and coach, and this is Food Freedom Body Love, a podcast I put together to help you make peace with food, body image, and weight so you can kick your all-consuming, exhausting weight control food obsession habits and start living your best, healthiest life. Welcome back to Sessions, where I am working one-on-one with practitioners and professionals in the body image, weight-inclusive, anti-diet field, and we are exploring struggles and challenges of working in this field. Today, I'm super excited because I am working with a naturopathic student, and I remember being in her position like it was yesterday and having questions and concerns and not having the vocabulary for it. This student is just so much further along than I ever was as a student. And it's inspiring and encouraging to hear her asking the questions that she's asking. And what we're really looking at is what it looks like to be a student learning about health and wellness and medicine and feel like you don't fit in to the education that you're being given, to feel like you don't fit the mold. I've talked about this before because personally I have been in this place of feeling like I am trying to squeeze myself in to a philosophy about health that doesn't actually include or want me. It demonizes my appetite. It demonizes the way that I like to live my life. And it makes it seem like health is not accessible to me when it absolutely is. And so I have felt so lucky to be able to shrug off a lot of the dated messaging. And I say dated because truly there's like 50 years of research to support the work that we're doing in this anti-diet weight inclusive field. And so even though I think the health and wellness field would really pride itself on being avant-garde and cutting edge, when it comes to weight and health, particularly and food, it is, you know, just recycling the same dated, ineffective messaging and just packaging it up and marketing it in different ways. It's not new, right? And it hasn't been working and it's not going to work. And so it's just super encouraging and exciting to hear a student asking these questions, challenging this idea that she has to fit a certain mold, wondering how she can work with others without perpetuating this dated, ineffective messaging, and really questioning, you know, the education that she's getting and the contradictory messaging that she gets within it, and wondering, you know, why is it so contradictory? And why aren't we looking at the bigger picture? And why am I learning from 10 different people with 10 different philosophies on what to eat, and not one single person is talking about how to eat? Or the forces that affect food choices in different populations and why those things are important to understand. So love this conversation today. And I just want to say that this new program that I have launching in a couple of weeks for professionals and practitioners is all about helping you not throw away the education that you've gotten, but sort through it, sift through it, update it, and develop a health and wellness philosophy that absolutely includes you, the practitioner, allows you to be at the center of your practice without feeling like you need to shift and change everything about yourself. And that in fact, you being you is your superpower, and that you don't need to fit an impossible mold. You need to break the mold so that you can innovate and make something new, and so that we can all be working toward making safe and inclusive spaces for all bodies in our practices. So let's dig into this conversation. And if you are interested in the Redefining Health program for practitioners and professionals, you can find the link in my bio. I genuinely hope you'll join us.
So I'm a second year student in naturopathic medicine right now. And I reached out because recently I've been reflecting on kind of how I'm supposed to navigate struggling with body image and my relationship with food while also looking to the future and figuring out how am I supposed to manage myself struggling with these issues while also trying to be the navigator for other people in their health journeys. And so that's really what I was hoping to kind of pick out and dissect with you together?
Yeah, that's such a good question. Super, super, super important. I've shared a couple of times on my Instagram feed. I don't know if I've ever openly talked about it on the podcast, but just how many people that are in positions of guiding people through nutrition and alternative medicine as well, when it comes to like, or more like conventional forms of nutrition, like dietetics, but how many of those individuals actually have anywhere from just a disordered relationship with food and body to full-blown eating disorders, right? And so I think it's wherever we are on that spectrum, I think it's like such a good thing to be asking ourselves, like, where am I? How do I feel about food in my body before we jump into helping other people? So I love that, first of all. But why don't you tell me just a little bit about your relationship with food and body now? And if there are, I can't remember in second year if you're doing a little bit of clinical work or not, but even just within classes, like if there's anything that you're finding triggering in the moment.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I know that I've struggled with body image for long, long time. I can pinpoint the day that I became aware of my body.
Wow.
And it was basically, I think I was 11 years old, and my parents had some friends over that I'd not met before. And the friends came in, and my mom was like, hey, you should go play the piano for our guests and show off. I came in, and all I can remember is the first thing they remarked to me, or to my mother rather, was, wow, your daughter is so fat. And I was just devastated and refused to play the piano. I was out of there for the rest of the night. And after that, like, just the hyper awareness of the body was just always there afterwards, of myself and then also of other people. And that's where it really started for me. And then my relationship with food, I think, kind of deteriorated after that as well. But I think it's more the issue of hyper awareness of the body and just always thinking about the body, always thinking about how other people are perceiving the body, but then also, you know, the food I'm putting in will be affecting that as well. So that's kind of where my struggles are at.
And do you have a history of engaging in dieting, like either standardized, you know, standard dieting, which I think of as like Jenny Craig, Weight Watchers, et cetera, or healthy lifestyle dieting, which is when we use food and we say it's for health, but really it's to control our body. Like, do you have a history of doing either or of those?
Yeah, that's the thing that I find is kind of interesting, is that I do have this hyper awareness of my body, but I've not really struggled with any of the control or the wanting to lose weight excessively. Like, I've thought like, oh, it'd be nice if I lost 10 pounds, but it's not, that's not what's on my mind. It's more just like me being uncomfortable in my current body. But I've never struggled with under eating. It's more like overeating almost, because I'm just a total foodie and I love food. But I don't know. I've never had any of those, like the guilt after eating meals or like shaming myself. Like, I've not struggled with that. So maybe I just love food a little bit too much. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. And when you say overeating, do you mean, does it feel like comfortable? Like, oh, I enjoy food, and so I eat plenty of it? Or does it feel like you're actually overeating to the point where you're physically uncomfortable?
No, I would say that like maybe more than half of the times I'm overeating, like to the point where it's uncomfortable afterwards.
Okay. So there could be, it's always really interesting to me. You know, there's this connection between restriction and overeating. We'll have to dig into it a little bit more, but sometimes even without overt restriction, there can be almost a rebelliousness to restriction and like, I'm going to go for it, but we can dig into that a little bit more. I'm really interested in this hyper awareness of your body and how, like, if you're not worried about your weight, what is it that you're worried about, or what is it that you're being self-critical about?
I don't know. I think it's more of the, like, I'm not terribly bothered to be the shape that I am. I think it's more, I'm terribly bothered that everyone else is a different shape than I am, if that makes any sense.
Okay. So feeling other.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Like, growing up, I was just like the bigger girl of the class, and that was okay. Like, I didn't mind that. I wasn't really bullied for it, but it was just like, oh, how come my friends can fit into that and my body doesn't? But it wasn't like, oh, like I want to be that shape. It was more like, why can't my body also look nice in like that kind of same outfit or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It, which in a sense though, like if we were going to dig just a little bit below the surface, I think if there's a feeling that your body doesn't look good in the clothes or that it can't, then there is a desire to look good in the clothes. There is on some level a bit of a desire for your body to be different, right?
Mm, yeah.
Probably.
No, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. I would think so.
Yeah. And does it stop you from anything? Like, does it stop you from any kinds of like activities or, you know, shopping, socializing, sexual relationships? Like, does it stop you in any way?
I think before, maybe like 5 years ago, I did let it stop me. But after exploring it for many, many years, I think I've kind of been able to let go of that. And so now, you know, I can just walk around with a crop top and not be as hyper aware as I was before, but at least I'm wearing it, right? Like before I would have just not bought it at all.
Yeah.
So I think there's some progress there, but I definitely did let it hold me back before.
Okay. And then what are the things that you are currently finding triggering when it comes to sort of your education or the work you're doing, the conversations that you have at school? What are the things that you find challenging or that you worry you might struggle with as you go into this work fully?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest two classes that I've had problems with is obviously nutrition. When, you know, there's a lot of negative talk around food, just like, you know, one professor will say, oh, flaxseed is like, you should be eating it every day or else you're not going to live to 100. And then the next one will say, oh, flaxseed is going to kill you, never eat it, right? And so there's just like this whole messaging around food being categorized as good or bad. And I, before coming to school, I didn't really categorize food in that way. I was kind of like, this is good, this is nourishing my body, this is also nourishing my body, like what's the difference if my body feels good consuming it, right? And so that's something I've been struggling with. And then just the physical part of medicine, doing, you know, looking at other people's bodies, I find difficult because then I find myself comparing a lot or being self-conscious of other people, you know, like they're going to go palpate the spine or whatever. And I'm like, don't palpate my spine. You know, yeah. there's a lot of hyper awareness of other people looking at my body, I think, right, when it comes to those things.
Yeah. Cause we do a lot of like modeling and learning on each other, right? Just for anyone who's never been in that kind of education, we do a lot of like acupuncture on each other and physical exams and learning on each other's bodies. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Let's start with the nutrition thing, because I think that's really interesting. And I think for people who may not be aware of it, and I should just check in with you because I'm not sure. I went to naturopathic school many, many years ago. And at the time, nutrition was taught by a series of instructors. They were all kind of different and they all came and presented. It was supposed to be sort of on different pieces of nutrition or different aspects of nutrition, but it did end up resulting in like, I can't even remember now. I want to say like 10 over the course of the years, maybe more, maybe 15 widely varied points of view on nutrition and food. Mm-hmm. Is it sort of the same right now?
Oh yeah. Nothing's changed then.
Right. And it's like, again, quite dogmatic, quite black or white, all or nothing thinking. And each person that comes to speak has their own idea of like what's healthy and what's not.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then often they're contradicting each other. And us students are left to try and figure out on our own, like, which ones do we believe? Should we even be believing one person, you know?
Yeah, it's probably even more complicated now. Like when I was in school, you know, the predominant kind of alternative theories around nutrition were more like vegetarian, vegan based. But now there's been this, you know, surgence of like paleo, primal, keto, which is even more contradict, like they contradict each other so much. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's found its way into the nutrition education. And then when you get into clinical nutrition, kind of like next year, I think probably third year you get into that, you get into like the really reductive aspects of nutrition, which is like vitamin A, how do we dose it? Why do we dose it? And it's just another really interesting, but sometimes challenging kind of information to get about food and like, what does that mean to sort of the lived experience of eating? So I would just say that, like, you know, what I'm trying to express here is that it's quite a confusing nutritional education.
Yeah, it definitely seems like people from all walks of opinions are kind of trying to press their opinion onto us. Yeah. And it's up to us to kind of figure out which bits and pieces to take from each one. But there's not really much guidance there. It's kind of, you're left to figure it out on your own, what you value and what you don't value.
So, right. And one of the things that I've realized since I left school is that what we were never given, what we were never taught was a very, because the reality is that there are many kinds of ways to eat, and those many kinds of ways to eat can be really right for a lot of different people. But since I've left, what I've realized is that we were never given a consistent understanding of how to eat. So there's so much focus on what to eat and what not to eat, but no one is actually talking about how of eating, and how do we consistently nourish ourselves. And then I would also say that running through the nutrition education that I got when I was in school was a lot of diet culture messaging as well. So a lot of, like, you know, often framed in what I call now a deficit model, like, so make, like, always sort of presuming that we're not getting enough, that we're like undernourished, but we don't want to overeat, like that kind of contradictory messaging as well, where it's like, we need more micronutrients, but we need to make sure we don't eat too much because we need to keep our bodies a certain way, which is also very confusing. So is that still the same? Like, is anyone talking about how
no,
to eat?
No, definitely not. And yeah, I have noticed that there really is that gap in knowledge. You know, we come out of school expected to be practitioners, knowing how to guide other people, yet nowhere in the courses are we actually instructed, here is like how you should be cooking, this is how you should be enjoying your meal, this is how you should be socializing with others while you enjoy your meal, and the benefits of that. It's just like, oh, you need XYZ of vitamin XYZ in order to live a happy and full life. And I'm like, there's so much more than just that, but it's just not touched upon.
Yeah. I got like an interesting, it was really good. I got an interesting email because I put out a call for sort of questions from medical practitioners and health and wellness practitioners. And, you know, what are some questions that you have, or where are you challenged? And, you know, in the more medical field, it's really interesting because they're often dealing with different kinds of eating issues than present to naturopaths. And that's just because people who tend to seek out naturopaths are already quite interested in food and nutrition and living a certain way. And so we get a kind of a different ball game of questions or problems. But this same lack of education is true in the medical community as well. They're just not getting any of the what really either. They're getting no what, no how, a couple of little tidbits here and there. But this medical doctor was sort of saying, like, where do I even start when someone's just eating, you know, fast food all day and drinking like 7 Cokes a day? And fundamentally, you know, it's like, how do I get them to change? And it's like, fundamentally, don't start with the what. You need to start with how they're feeding themselves. Mm-hmm. And that relationship with food, and all of a sudden it becomes so much more simpler in terms of like how to manage these issues. And I would say that the same is true in our field, in that there are so many food and nutrition issues that we can solve by just putting in a strong foundation of how to eat. And then when that's in place and people are feeding themselves consistently, then we can, like, I call it like spiraling up into higher levels of conversations where we can look to some of these different ways of eating that we've been taught, or these food philosophies. And we have the ability from that place to choose what's right for us based on our values and how we want to feel and what health struggles we're being confronted with. But it's this foundation that's missing. So I guess I would say, that when it comes to the nutrition stuff, you can take it all in and you can learn it all and you can pass those classes and just do whatever you need to do to like get through them while, you know, storing away tidbits of information that might be useful with certain people. But I think that what I would highly recommend is to really start educating yourself on the how of eating. Right. And I can send you resources, but if you haven't read it already, I mean, intuitive eating is a research validated model for feeding and eating. Mm-hmm. And my favorite in terms of like, I love intuitive eating, but Ellen Satter's competent eating model is also a research validated model for eating based on the how of eating, you know?
Right.
And both of those models are trust-based and they both allow, when the person has the foundation in place, they both allow for like the integration eventually of nutritional information and body knowing. That's just, it's a more advanced place for a lot of people, but it totally is possible. And that's where we can really integrate and offer up some great information to people who are in the right place when it comes to using food to affect health. So I think it's all good. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I remember going through the first year nutrition's class and just, we were talking about how all these people are on terrible diets for you and, you know, they're killing themselves early because of they're eating junk food and what you were saying. But then we never really addressed like, why are people even eating this way in the first place? Did we talk about food deserts? Did we talk about socioeconomic status? No, like,
no.
It just boggled my mind because my undergraduate degree was in health sciences. And so that's all we learned was why are people predisposed to be like eating this way or having these health concerns when other people don't? And I was just like, why are we not talking about this? Naturopathic medicine is all about the root cause. Why is this lacking, you know?
Yeah, I feel that's been one of the biggest takeaways for me in shifting my work as well, is realizing that like the goal, two major things. The first thing is we're naturopaths. And so fundamentally, we are supposed to believe that the human body knows how to heal itself and knows how to be well. And yet, when it comes to food, we don't believe that at all. When it comes to food and weight, right? It's like, we think that we have to micromanage everything and manipulate and create highly artificial eating scenarios in order to meet our nutritional needs. Like, it's just very interesting to me that fundamentally we are supposed to believe in the human body, but when it comes to food, we don't at all. There's very little trust that,
yeah, exactly,
that our bodies can A, manage lots of different kinds of food, and B, will naturally and competently seek out the correct amount of and variety of food, right? And then I agree with you. I think there is this whole root cause where the root, we stop looking for root beyond the human body, and really the root of so many of the issues that we see when it comes to health today are actually systemic issues that have nothing to do, I shouldn't say nothing, but much less to do with the actual human and much more to do with the scenario that they're living in, the system that they're living in, the access that they have. So yeah, I was not as on it as you are. And I did not realize that. I knew there was something off. I've often talked about this. There was something off that I was not comfortable with in our education because of my own history with food. But I was not as on it as you are in terms of recognizing these really specific issues that weren't being addressed, right? The marketing of food and who gets marketed to and the accessibility and affordability and understanding that affordability isn't just price, it's also time and the resources to prepare food and to have the emotional bandwidth to prepare food. So yeah, it's a very narrow kind of, I mean, I hate to say it like this, but it's just the truth, classist, ableist, often even racist, I would say, conversation when it comes to nutrition, because it often also places a lot of cultural foods into the huge no-no category as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. Like, I've not seen any recognition of like my cultural foods,
right?
At all. Right. It's all like Mediterranean diet. Okay, sure. How do I apply that to Chinese cuisine. That's not going to happen. Like,
yeah. And there's definitely certain aspects of like Asian and South Asian cuisine that are almost always placed in the no-no categories. And it's like, if we understand that, that connection is nourishing to us and culture is nourishing to us, like, where does that fit into the picture? So I love this identification of like, also, if we're really looking at it from like a holistic perspective, you know, eating isn't just about micronutrients. It's about so much more than that. So I think both intuitive eating and Ellen Satter's Secrets of Feeding a Healthy Family, both of those books are a good place to start. Also, from a practitioner perspective, I'm happy to send you the names of a few fat studies readers because they do a really good job of looking at the actual research. Like, they're not as readable, you know, as some of these other books because it's literature and academia. But for you, I think it would be so interesting to take a look at some of these more complicated concepts that we're talking about right now and actually look at researched writing about how these things, like a great paper in one of the fat studies readers about how, you know, foods that might negatively impact the middle class and upper class can actually be incredibly health providing for those in lower socioeconomic classes because they're just dense in macronutrient, right? Mm-hmm. And when you don't have enough access to food, that's fundamentally the first step to being well nourished is just getting enough food. So it's really interesting to start to take a look at these things with like from a wider angle, you know, and when we take our eyes just off micronutrients, like what starts to open up and lots of conversations. So I'm happy to like follow up and give you those. And I think, I mean, I'm not sure, but hopefully with a broader framework, you'll be able to go into those classes and take the good and not feel triggered. Does that land? Do you think that's possible for you?
No, yeah, I think it's unfortunate that we have to go outside of the curriculum to find these missing pieces, but I feel like the missing pieces you're describing are going to be very helpful for me. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I will say is that, you know, some of the reasons that we're highly triggered by food conversation is the underlying body discomfort that we have. Mm-hmm. So there's the possibility that exploring that wider lens won't clear up all of the triggers, but at least you'll have a better perspective on what you're learning and how to apply it. And you'll have much better language. I found it a very big struggle when I got into the clinical year in school because there were so many situations where I felt like we were pushing a nutritional solution for a non-nutritional problem. Mm-hmm. And I didn't always have the language or the vocabulary. So something again was off. I knew something was off, but I didn't have the words to back up how I was feeling. So I think that this will start to also give you some of that language when you go to help others, you know. Does it feel limiting to you to think about approaching nutrition differently?
I don't know if it's limiting. I just feel myself that I am limited in my own knowledge, but also the experience in interacting with others. And I certainly have experienced being triggered in school. So my biggest fear is becoming the triggerer to my future patients, you know, and so what you were saying about language, I think that's so, so important to learn how to properly articulate to people that we want to help navigate health without actually bringing them a step backwards because we don't know which way to say it and how to support them best, right?
I have another great paper from Ellen I'll send you. You have to remind me to send you all of these things. But I have another great paper from Ellen Satter on education, nutritional education, and how to actually... it's a research paper, but it's a little bit more of a think piece in like, how can we teach the how without triggering some of these other things? And it's really interesting because it really pushes you to examine your language. And the reality is you're not going to always get it right. And you can't avoid triggering everyone, you know, I've occasionally made a joke and it's been misinterpreted as nutritional advice. And then people get triggered by it. And I'm like, oh, I was totally kidding. I didn't think that that would be taken that way at all. It happens. I think it's just coming into it with that awareness. You'll start to see, I mean, it's called a practice. Like, you're going to start a practice, and it's called a practice for a reason, right? Because you're going to practice. And, you know, 10 years down the road, you're going to look back and go like, oh, those poor first people that came to see me. But the reality is that we have something to offer, even the first people that come through the door, and we get better and better just by doing. And you'll start to notice small signs when someone is hearing something, but it's shutting them down versus opening them up. And, you know, you won't be perfect. None of us are perfect. We make mistakes all the time, but at least there's that awareness, right? As opposed to like, you know, going in like a bull in a china shop and recommending some pretty harsh food restrictions or food recommendations without considering the bigger picture for the person. You know, it'll give you some of that language and process. Because it's one thing to understand the concepts, and it's another to then like teach someone else who's grown up within this culture, how do they start to eat differently and feed mm-hmm. themselves differently. So that I think will be really interesting for you as well. And yeah, I asked the restriction question because I think one of the things that I hear often from practitioners is naturopaths in particular, which is really interesting. It's like, well, how can I possibly keep doing this job if I don't see food this way, you know? And the reason it's so interesting to me is because as naturopaths, we have an almost unlimited toolkit of resources to help people with their health. Like, we have herbs and we have supplements and we have acupuncture and we have physical medicine and we have hydrotherapy. And there are so many ways that we can support people. And like I said earlier, we can take some of these food concepts and integrate them properly and actually create a lot of change in the human body without having to do major restriction or major food cutting out. So I just think that there's still so much opportunity for helping people with their health without, it just highlights for me, I guess, how much we have a deep cultural, just worldwide, I mean, a cultural conditioning that to impact someone's health, we have to actively be like restricting things, controlling things, micromanaging, especially food. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And when you were saying about education, it just made me think that, you know, whenever I think of working with people in the future, I think about like, how can I tell other people to do this, that, and the other thing with their health and to improve their relationship with their bodies and all this. And yet still here I am struggling. Am I not able to practice what I preach? And so that's something that I've also struggled on reflecting on and even deciding if it's okay if I can struggle with that at the same time as helping other people.
Well, it sounds like you're managing. I mean, the fact that you're able to coach yourself through tough moments and just keep going and like wear the clothes you want to wear, there's a certain amount of self-coaching that's happening there where you're shrugging off some of the challenging thought processes that you have, often which are deeply rooted and hard to make ever fully go away. You know, like when we've had a really major event around our body, like you did at 11, like something that really impacted you, that might never go away. You know, your goal is just to manage that feeling, that trauma, that experience, so that you can just live your life the way you want to live it. And then, yeah, I think that continuing to work on that and continuing to improve your body image and the way you feel in your body will absolutely allow you to be more solid and grounded when you give recommendations. Because the link that I sort of alluded to earlier that's so important in this work is the understanding that often people will present to you with food issues. So I overeat, I binge eat, I'm an emotional eater, I self-sabotage, they say it a thousand different ways, but it's mm-hmm. the food problem that they often will come to the clinic with. But it's understanding that the food problem isn't the problem at all. The food problem is just a symptom of the bigger issue, which is trying to put unnatural restraints on their eating.
Right.
And the reason they're putting unnatural restraints on their eating is because somewhere along the way, they've come to believe that their body is wrong. Mm-hmm. Sort of like you did, you know, like you, there was that moment. And then all of a sudden food, instead of just being something that's, although this link didn't happen for you right away, as I understand it, but for many people, you know, the moment that their body is wrong, the solution to that is to control food, is to restrict and control and micromanage. And as they try to put those unnatural limitations on food, their body starts to react and we start to see the symptoms of the body fighting back, which is rebelliousness, going unconscious, being reactive, just really goes into all kinds of interesting places and patterns. So occasionally, occasionally, people also show up just with the fundamental belief that their weight and body are wrong. And then there's often food things going on there as well. So the more comfortable you can get with your difference, your kind of different to other people, the more grounded you'll be in helping someone else accept their differences.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my worry is that they'll come in and here I am sitting here, not being the advertised picturesque, you know, like super duper slender and healthy and goes for 10K runs every morning, you know, and they come in expecting that. And there I am instead. And I think there's a little bit of insecurity there of, I'm not going to be able to live up to the expectations of what they would think health, like best health would be, or I'm not the model of good health, so why would they trust me with their health? And so that's just an insecurity that.
Well, let me save you 10 years of your life right now. Let's save you 10 years of your life. When I started fully doing this work, when I like really shifted my practice, it was because I'd had my second baby. My body would not, quote unquote, bounce back after that baby. It was okay, but it wouldn't bounce back. And I started engaging in more and more restriction and like hyper focus and hyper awareness and testing and supplements. And I just couldn't get, I was going down this real, real restriction hole. And got to the point where I'd had a bunch of blood work done. I'd done bioidentical hormones. I'd done everything to try to like fix my body to be healthy. But really, you know, if I was being really honest with you, I was trying to fix my weight. At the time, though, they were so linked, I wouldn't have been able to separate them. Like, I really thought that my weight was proof that I was unhealthy. And it's really hard to even admit that because I had done so much work for so long to separate myself from that storyline, to be more relaxed around weight and food because of my earlier history in my 20s. And I thought I had done it, but this whole situation of my body changing and my body looking different really forced me to kind of deeply confront it. And I'm doing all these things and I don't even enjoy doing them. And I realized that for like, you know, the first 5 years of my practice, you know, as I try to untangle all this stuff, I had to get some help and hire someone to help me untangle it all. But I just realized like I have been selling and preaching and pushing a version of health and wellness that I don't even like. Like the moment I decided to hire some help and fully untangle it was when it exhausted me to the point where I was like, this is becoming incredibly unhealthy. I got blood work back. It was all normal. It was showing me that I was healthy and I was disappointed because I didn't have a reason why my weight was where it was. And the reason my weight was where it was is just that's where my weight was supposed to be at that time. You know, like that was healthy for me. My body changed. My body changed through pregnancies. My body also changed again through giving up of food restriction and dieting in the name of health. Those are just facts. But again, looking back, I was like, whoa. There was all of this freedom as I untangled these things, because I started to be able to define health and wellness in a way that excited me, that I felt like excited to live every day, that I felt joyful about, that felt good to me, that I could actually live every single day sustainably. And as I looked back, I was like, oh my gosh, I was just selling this version of health and wellness that I struggled to keep up with. Like, I was struggling to keep up with it. I often felt like I had to hide things in my grocery cart at the store. I felt sometimes embarrassed by my food likes, you know, if it wasn't one of those super clean foods. I felt embarrassed by my appetite. And I wouldn't have overtly described it like this at the time, but just looking back, I was like, why did I feel embarrassed about my cart? Why did I feel embarrassed about my body or whatever? Because I was living really well and I still take care of myself and live really well. But I just realized that I was struggling to meet the health and wellness standards that I'd set. Right. And I say I'd set when really, you know, obviously I had learned them places and absorbed them over many years. But it's so freeing to realize, like, if I'm struggling with it, there's a very real chance that almost everyone who walks through the door is also going to struggle with it. Like, I'm not just some exceptional failure. And I'm not supposed to be some exceptional example either. Like, I just need to be a human having a human experience. And the more I can learn from that, the more I have to offer. And so all of a sudden there was all of this freedom and like possibility to create the kind of health and wellness that I wanted to live. And then it's so much fun to bring everyone else along for the ride because it opens up all the possibility for them. Because most of the people that are walking through your door aren't 6 foot tall supermodels. Most of them are also, you know, just humans muddling through having a human experience with a body that ages and changes and doesn't always, you know, quote unquote, behave the way we're told our bodies should behave. And so to me, I just feel like what an opportunity to start exploring that from second year school. Like, what does health even mean to you? What is the purpose of it in your life? What to you feels really good to do in the pursuit of that level of health? Like, what feels fulfilling and meaningful and joyful? And what feels like it starts to cross this line into like, oh, this is pulling from me and taking from me more than it's actually giving to me, you know? Mm-hmm. And then as you sort this out for yourself, you're just going to attract people who are looking for the same thing.
Right.
So is there always the possibility that someone is going to judge our bodies and be like, oh, you know, you're not healthy enough to teach me or to help me with my health? I mean, yes, of course, that's always a possibility. I'm just like, really, truly, if that's your belief system and you're unwilling to like take a look at that or change it, probably you're not going to be my favorite best patient in my practice. And Go find that other person. You know what I mean? Or if there's someone who's looking for really dogmatic information about nutrition, I'm not going to be right for them, you know? And so I'll go one step further to say, like, as you sort this out for yourself, trying to be as clear and as open and as honest about it, like on your website and your marketing material. And will it be potentially polarizing or divisive? Like, sure, but that's actually a good thing. We know that, right? Like, it's a good thing for people to be able to be like, that's the practitioner I want, or that's not the practitioner for me, you know, before they even fill out the intake form or book the appointment. So yeah, I would spend less time worrying about how you'll be perceived, because you'll be perceived however you're going to be perceived, and there's not a lot you can do about it.
That's true, yeah.
But spend more time thinking about why you feel like you're going to be perceived negatively, and what's fueling that, and what is it about the current health and wellness philosophy that you're learning means that you're automatically outside of it because of your humanness.
Yeah, right? Exactly. No, I think that really resonates with me, saying that kind of where I'm at is going to attract ultimately the clients that I'm going to work best with in the end, because my lived experience is going to be able to help them rather than me trying to fit into this like weird invisible expectations box that I've made for myself.
Yeah. Yeah. And I say, you know, and I said that I'd set the standards and you're saying the expectations you've set for yourself, really they're things that have been sold to us, right? Mm-hmm. Like we aren't creating them out of thin air. Someone has given them to us, but to really start to examine, like I said, if you're not even allowed to be part of it, is it something, you know, it's like the secret club or something. And like, if you automatically feel outside of it just for being the human being that you are, like maybe it's not for you. And actually maybe it's not for anyone. Maybe this isn't a standard or a philosophy or an ideal that anyone should be shooting for. Mm-hmm. If we feel outside of it. And that is something that I did not have the language to ask when I first started this work. When I first started being a naturopath, like it was like, that's what health is. That's what wellness is. That's what it looks like. When really there's so many different iterations of health and wellness, and there should be some version of health that is available to every human on the planet if it interests them.
Mm-hmm. And if and they it'll have look the, different the for them too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not every single person can or will or may even want to achieve some kind of pinnacle of health and wellness. And so how do we help people uncover, you know, what their health and wellness values are and what's important to them? And then how do we help them meet goals that come from inside of them instead of imposing our values and beliefs and philosophies onto them? Mm-hmm. I guess is an interesting question.
Yeah, no, I think now that I've been thinking about it, I remember like going to see the first few clinical interns and just having like a very, I wouldn't say like negative experience, but kind of resistant experience with them, because they were kind of doing what you were describing, like imposing what they thought or what worked best for them onto me. An example of this would be the person I was seeing was just like, I teach yoga, I love yoga, whoop-de-doo, yoga is life. And I'm just like, cool, I tried yoga once or twice or a year. I tried it and didn't love it. And then even though I had expressed that this type of movement was not for me, but here's all the other types of movement that I do resonate with, she was still adamant on being like, yoga is like the only thing that you can do that is good, like the best for your body. And right. So I was like, oh wow, what if I turn out to be like that, but for the things that I value, and I'm, instead of listening to the patient and what they value, I'm just going to impose what I feel works best.
Right. And then like, maybe you didn't try the right yoga or the right teacher or the right, and you're like, no, I did. It's not for me. Yeah. And I think some of that too is being a new practitioner, right? And having like, not trusting that you can go into the room and just go with the flow and meet people where they're at. Some of that I think is that newness, you know, but I do think that some of it is also believing that there is one way to be healthy and one way to eat and one way to move and one way, you know, and it's just so limiting. It's so limiting and it doesn't allow you, like, again, this whole idea with naturopathic medicine is to treat the individual. Is to treat the person.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So we have to care about the individual likes and needs if we're going to treat the individual and meet them where they are and not fit them into a box. And you're already halfway there. You know, the fact that you're asking the questions, that you're learning about these things, willing to be the expert guide but not have to be the expert in everything is really hard as well. And I used to, I remember even early in my career doing the same thing. Like I just do. I remember people coming in and me giving advice and them sometimes pushing back. And then I'd just be like, why are you here then? What do you want from me? You know, why are you coming to me asking me for advice if you don't want to take it? And it's like, what I'm getting better and better at is understanding that most people have a lot of those answers inside of themselves. And so what we're really there is not to tell people what to do, but to help pull away all of the layers and all of the obstructions and all of the barriers so that they can figure out what's right for themselves, you know? And sometimes that does involve making suggestions and guiding, but I think it's a really different process, like telling somebody what to do versus helping them figure out what's right for them. Those are two really different processes. Yeah.
Yeah. And the latter, they'd actually, I think, stick with it a lot more and a lot easier because it really has come from their own mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's been like well established in therapy anyway. And I, I definitely, anyone who's ever listened to me do any of this knows that I definitely err on the side of teacher, educator, coach, not therapist, because I do more directing than probably any therapist would be comfortable with. But for me, that's just born out of the fact that I find that these health and wellness ideals are, and weight and food ideals are so deeply indoctrinated that if I just asked questions of people, it would take us 20 years to get where I sometimes feel like, you know, we need to get in a few weeks. You know, it's like, if I just waited for people to kind of realize that the current weight and health and food culture that we are living in is a struggle and is a problem, is a barrier to them being well, you know, we'd be waiting for a really long time because it seems to be believed and lived out by almost everybody around us, right? So I definitely do more directing in that area for sure. But ultimately, once those fundamental beliefs are broken down and reestablished, it's like from there, when people have a different perspective, when they have the right motivation and the right understanding of like a more, not the right, a more objective, neutral understanding of food and movement and health and bodies and how they're linked, like from there, they really just start to take things away, like take it away. They take the show away. They're off and running and they get to direct things is what I mean, you know? But most people, when they first come into this work, don't even have that ability because they're just so used to everybody telling them how to live.
Yeah. And to even think about what barriers they would have faced to even avoided reflecting on that or even noticing that that was influencing them in the first place, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a really deep and major part of diet culture to convince you that all the time that you feel bad is just because you're detoxing or just your body needs to adjust, kind of like with that yoga thing, right? Like you just have to try a bit harder. Like if you've got the keto flu, you just have to go a little longer. You have to push a little harder. You have to, you know, it really tells you to override any signs or symptoms that something may not be good for you in order to fit into that mold.
Yeah.
So we didn't go too deeply into the personal side of it, but I do think that the reading that I'm going to offer up will help you do that, you know. And I think even beyond that, I think understanding that on some level most of us are dealing with some body discomfort, and it doesn't have to be an absolute barrier as long as you're aware of it and you're working with it and you are you know, as triggers come up, you're managing it. And if you can't manage it, you're getting some support to manage it. Then you're doing the work. You're absolutely doing the work.
Yeah. And I don't think it'll ever end. It's just going to be a forever process.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. Doesn't end. Yeah. It doesn't end. It just gets lighter. It gets lighter. Yeah. It gets less heavy. It gets less compelling. You know, we're not as drawn into the drama when it starts in our own mind, you know. We're able to separate ourselves from it, and it gets easier, but it keeps going.
Yeah. And I think the more I have been able to struggle with my own experiences, that is kind of giving me not leverage, but like a deeper understanding of what other people could be going through or any variation of what I'm going through. And so I hope that will give me experience for
totally
from the future.
Every time you struggle to put on the top that you want to wear and you coach yourself through it to wear the thing you want to wear, you're developing a toolkit that you can offer up to somebody else, right? I think it's also, I mean, I don't know how this fits into it or not, but I'll just offer it up as one last thing before we finish, that like, you don't ultimately need to get to a place where you really enjoy random strangers palpating your back just for educational experience. You know, I just want to say that, like,
yeah,
I think sometimes the within this body positive movement, which I love, and the body acceptance movement which I love, there's an idea that we have to eventually get to this place where we're just like fine to show our bodies anywhere and any way and to whomever, and that we'll enjoy our bodies being touched or palpated, or, you know, like it's just open up to the possibility that the end point will be as unique as you are. Do you know what I mean? Like how comfortable you are with clothes and showing your body and having your body touched by other people. Like that's all up for discovery essentially. And there's no right outcome with that either as you explore it. Right. It's just about getting to a point where you feel good about it and you don't feel like it's impeding your work or your life.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. I mean, same with putting in this expectation of who I am as a practitioner, and then also this expectation of who I am in this body, right?
Yeah.
I need to destroy the box.
That's right. Destroy the boxes.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 Less what Glennon Doyle says, less indoctrination, more imagination. So I feel like, you know, my version of that is like less dogma, more discovery, more exploration, more curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that's totally what I needed to hear.
Thanks as always for being here. I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. And I want you to know that if you are in the health and wellness field and you want to take a look at your practice and how anti-diet and weight inclusive and trust based it actually is, I would love for you to go to the link in the show notes and you'll find a self audit that I put together where you can take a look at your practice and the 7 key elements of a weight inclusive anti-diet practice and really evaluate, you know, where are you getting it right? Where are you wobbly? Where are you struggling? And depending on where you're at in your practice, I would love for you to join me in redefining health for professionals and practitioners. And if you're further along and that doesn't feel quite right for you, you can set up a call with me to see if my upcoming mastermind is right for you. Either way, I would love to work with you. I am working very hard to create a collaborative community of practitioners who are working in this way, where all of the fundamentals are in place so that we can actually start to have some really high level, more nuanced conversations about this work and how to apply it in a way that is going to work for the people who need this help. So take a look at the links in the show notes, and I will see you next week.